is an incredibly trivial point.
Hello everybody and welcome to Pong, Philosophers on Games. My name's Al Baker and I'm speaking from Sheffield in England.
I'm Brock Rao, speaking at Maryland in the United States of America.
I'm Chris Brenner and I'm talking from Glasgow, Scotland.
And as is hopefully obvious by now, this is a podcast where philosophers, that's us, are going to talk about video games. So through this series, we're going to be trying to have several discussions for your entertainment and your delectation, and maybe education as well, about philosophically interesting topics in games and features of games we think should be interesting to philosophers. So to start us off, the topic for the first episode is probably the second most discussed philosophical problems about video games, after whether or not they're dangerous, which is whether or not video games are art. So before we start that discussion, I think we should introduce ourselves a bit to any listeners who've joined us for this episode. So my name's Al, as I said, Al Baker. I'm a graduate student at the University of Sheffield, where I also teach sometimes, and I work mostly in the philosophy of art, and especially there at the intersection between philosophy of art and mind, so I talk about emotions and empathy and things like that.
I'm Brock Rao. I'm a graduate student at the University of Maryland. I'm also studying philosophy of art, and very specifically, philosophy of video games. I'm concerned primarily with the ontology of art, which just is the idea of defining what art is, and that's all in service of figuring out what video games are and whether they're ever going to count as art. So today's topic is right in my wheelhouse.
And I'm Chris Werner again. I'm a recently graduated PhD / early career academic living in Glasgow. My main interests are in philosophy of art and ethics, areas where they overlap, imagining, and a bit similarly to Al, I'm very interested in sort of empathy and sympathy as well.
Cool. So I think we should talk a little bit about the way these discussions are hopefully going to work. I mean, we all know that no plan survives first contact with the microphone, but this is basically the plan we've got. We're going to take a topic every episode, and we're going to talk about it from a philosophical perspective, and see if we can gain any kind of clearer understanding of what the issues are, and maybe even solve a problem or two. But that's very ambitious for philosophy. But we're also going to, wherever we can, find some readings that we're all going to read to kind of keep the discussion on the same track, and I'll put links to the readings or to places where you can buy the readings. So for this episode, we have read a few different things, some of them quite short, some essays and some journalism. So the first was Roger Ebert's famous tirade against video games ever counting as art. What's it called? It's just called Video Games Can Never Be Art, right?
Yeah,
that's his second entry. He made a big splash early on, got a lot of feedback, and gave it a second go.
Yeah, and this is one of his Chicago Sun-Times columns from which year?
2010,
cool. So that's the main thing that we've read on the negative side. No, video games can never be art. And on the positive side, we've got Aaron Smuts's paper from 2005, is it?
I believe that's right.
Called Are Video Games Art? And a chapter from Grant Taverner's book, The Art of Video Games, which is also called Video Games as Art. And we got a chapter from Dom Lopez's book, A Philosophy of Computer Art. That's chapter 7, which is called Atari to Art. And all those guys argue that video games are art, can be art, or maybe will be art one day.
Other than Ebert,
who argues that no, never, never, never. Apart from when he says never say never.
But, that's right.
Cool. So, how are we going to start?
Yeah, so when we start asking this question, are video games art? One thing we could do is just give an answer, yes or no, and some of our theorists have done that. One of the things that philosophy, particularly analytic philosophy, is really good at is stepping back and asking, well, what does this question even mean? Can we be clear on what it would take to answer this? Which means we've got to go back and ask, what are video games and what are art? But even before that, we might ask, why is it worth answering this question?
Yeah, so this is a common thing that's argued about on various message boards on the internet, right? And whenever you get one of these boards that gets started up, are video games art, is X video game a work of art or not, then there's inevitably some response somewhere that goes, oh, who cares, man, just let me play the game, it's just a game, let me play it. So is there anything that we can say to those people? Is it important for those people that we answer this question, even if they're not interested in it being answered. Because I think it is. Right, I think the question of whether video games are art is important, if only for practical purposes. So there's lots of real-world implications that come with the mediums being recognised as an art form, including in your wonderful homeland, Brock, you get First Amendment protections if you're working in an artistic medium, which I guess you don't if you're working in a non-artistic medium, necessarily.
Well, it's not exactly clear. It's something close to that. I mean, you get artistic expression freedom.
Yeah.
But you also get a tangible benefit. You can get National Endowment of the Arts funding now for video game proposals. So they've weighed in on it, and that's about as much of a tangible benefit as you could realize from achieving art status.
Yeah, and in France, I was reading, there's a Wikipedia page about video games, the art status of video games. And it was saying on there that, so with the usual caveats about taking stuff from Wikipedia, that Shigeru Miyamoto is in the French Order of Arts and Letters now. That's like the fanciest hall of fame that you can be admitted into.
Tax breaks being great as well, people. Probably for games developers and stuff like that, right?
Tax breaks, absolutely. So we can either be an art form or we can be a religion, and we'll get...
And even if people, even people who aren't interested in art and just want to play their games, should realize that a proliferation of more arty games, so to speak, could well lead to improvements in the sorts of more straightforward games that they enjoy anyway, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So here's a really good example from film, and I know we're probably going to be talking way too much about comparisons between film and video games, but George Lucas was of the first generation of filmmakers who went to film school, and it was only possible for there to be a film school because the art world had caught up and realized that there might be things worth learning and teaching about film. So this kind of generation of filmmakers who went on to make some of the best art films in the history of film, but also these enormous blockbusters which laid the template to any number of like good time films that everyone just enjoys but have, you know, limited if any really serious artistic value, is all traceable down to recognizing film as an art form. So there's no reason to think that a similar kind of thing won't happen with video games, and it's all predicated on taking video games seriously as something worth studying.
Yeah, I think that's all right, and so we've looked at these larger governmental institutional reasons why it matters whether video games are going to count as art or not. We've also seen, you've given some really good reasons why the societal endorsement of video games as art will lead to better games in the form of education and recognition. So we're getting closer and closer to the individual player. And I think there are reasons why the individual player, why it will matter to them how whether video games count as art or not. Not in their personal experience of any single game, but when video games get recognized as art, if that happens, if that's already happened or if that will happen, it leads to and legitimizes a certain kind of criticism about video games, both from players and developers and designers as they're making games. And this gets to Chris's point that that really will have an effect on how the games will be made and how they're received. And when they're received differently, they get made differently, and it becomes this feedback loop where different things will be emphasized in the creation of video games.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are all really good practical reasons. But there are also just really interesting philosophical reasons why we might wonder about whether video games count as art. So the question of what does and doesn't count as art has stalled quite a lot for a lot of the 20th century, because after Dadaism and Duchamp and all these things, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on, there was a kind of understanding that, okay, the question of media is really finished with now. So it's no longer the case that we can point to works in a specific media and say, okay, they're artworks by virtue of being in a specific media. But video games seem to have reawakened a lot of interesting parts of that debate. So people do make claims now about video games concerning features of the medium, which either mean that they have to be artworks or have to be disqualified from being artworks. So it's really interesting to look at a very specific medium with reference to whether or not works in that medium should be considered artworks, which is something that we haven't really had to do for a very long time.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's right. And really, video games are this new entry on the landscape for philosophy of art as this really excellent test case for all these theories, right? So as you mentioned, we've got these theories that are really concerned with the avant-garde and intentions of the artist and how that impacts whether something is an artwork or not. And there hasn't been something to really shake that up much in the last 80 or so years. I mean, obviously, Warhol's Brillo Box notwithstanding, I mean, this was just sort of a culmination of all of these phenomena. And now we've got this new thing that massive amounts of people are engaged with, and we'll have to say something about that, the different kinds of video games, you know, people are playing really big, tricked-out desktop computer games, and they're playing console games, they're playing games on their phone and their tablet. And, you know, video games got on the scene pretty quick. I mean, I know they've been around since the 50s, but they've gained a lot of cultural consciousness or presence in the last 15 years or so, really overwhelmingly. And now we've got this new kid on the scene, sort of fully formed. Does it fit in? Can our theories account for it? Do they give us answers? Are the answers they give us satisfying? Are they too trivial? All of this. So from a philosophical perspective, they're incredibly interesting as they push the boundaries of what's going to count and whether our theories are really well-equipped to answer that question.
Cool. So I imagine our listeners... So something that's interesting about the question of whether video games are art, it seems like everybody who's thought about it has a solid opinion on the question, but very rarely, I don't know if this is true for you guys, but very rarely when I see the question dealt with online, it's inevitably online, do they get at the really interesting motivations behind each of the answers? So I'm trying to figure out whether I should ask you guys what you think. Like, just what your answer to the question would be straight away, or whether we should work towards that.
Oh, I like this. I think we should tip our hands and then back up and explain later.
Okay, cool.
Chris, what are video games art?
Well, there's no reason... Well, okay, maybe that's too strong, but I feel like I'm not aware of any good reason why they could never be, right? So Ebert makes this move in his 2010 piece, where he says that a video game could only be art once it ceases to be a game, and that's part of that's sort of the nub of the question for me. The question of, like, is gameness in itself somehow, does it somehow conflict with artness, right? My suspicion is that it doesn't have to, but that remains to be seen, I suppose.
So you're saying you agree with Ebert to the extent that you have an intuition that the more arty something is, the less gamey it's going to be?
Oh, no, I mean, I don't share that intuition. I just think that it's a central one that has to be dealt with, right? It seems like some plausible to me, but I don't actually find it that persuasive myself.
So I think you're right, and that's the... I mean, we'll get on to this soon, but I think that is the most pressing challenge, that by virtue of the gameplay elements, for one reason or another, video games are going to have a very difficult time being called artworks in the same way that other things we call artworks are called artworks. But my intuition about... Not my intuition, my closely, carefully considered opinion about whether video games are art or not is that any of them could be, some of them are, and some of them will never be. So that's...
Well, I guess that leaves some space for me to... Yeah.
That's a philosopher's answer, if you've ever heard one.
You guys could not have set me up better.
Okay, cool.
There's a lot of people that have very strong negative reactions to Ebert because he's making what doesn't seem like a very considered opinion. I mean, he's just saying video games can never be art, right? This just smacks of the kind of get off my lawn type old guard kind of reaction to anything, something new, right, and fearing change. However, I think Chris is right. He's getting at something here, this idea that there's something about games that might be... incompatible with something being art. So my answer, are video games art? My answer is that video games can be art. I think that there are reasons why games cannot be art, ever. But happily, not all video games are games. And so when they're not, which is perhaps more often than we even think, then they're at least candidates for being artworks.
So you're agreeing with Ebert, essentially.
In a strange way, I never thought I'd say it, but I think he gives a very bad poorly argued version of what I think is something like the right train of thought.
It's incoherent as well, right? Because he repeatedly states video games in principle cannot be art, but then he also adds that maybe they will be one day, but he doesn't think anyone alive now will live to see it, right?
Yeah. And I think he's actually just wrong. I think that there are some that already are, and he just isn't aware of them. But I also think that a lot of the mouth-foamingly raging fanboys who've responded to him aren't really very aware of them either. So the conversation has kind of reached its limit in that format.
Does someone want to give a brief summary of Ebert's argument, and then we'll go on to discuss it? Someone who isn't me.
Part of the problem with summarizing Ebert's thing is that he doesn't really... Perhaps the main problem with it is that he doesn't really present a coherent argument throughout. And for that reason, it's not very easy to summarize, but we can list some of the points he makes. Obviously, we've already said that he makes this claim repeatedly that video games can never be art. He also makes this sort of side note at the start that he doesn't mention again, that maybe they will be one day, but we'll never live to see it. He sort of leaves that behind anyway and sticks with the idea that can never be. I think his best or central reason for arguing that is he's got like a little paragraph where he says that gameness is incompatible with artness, right? He says that you can win games, but you can't win art. You can't win a play or a novel. You experience them. Which strikes me as odd anyway, right? Because I'm not sure that games do have to be one in the strong sense that he's talking about. I mean, it made me think of Heavy Rain, for instance. I mean, it's true, you know, you might say there's a so-called good ending of Heavy Rain, where, like, everyone survives and justice is done and so forth. But given that an equal amount of care and thought has been put into some of the alternate sort of bad endings or just different endings, I would suggest that Heavy Rain doesn't really have win conditions, it only has end conditions. So that's something you just experience. But I wouldn't want to say that it's not a game either.
No, I think that's right. I think his discussion of some of the other games, especially Flower, when he talks about Flower, kind of belies his complete lack of knowledge of the state of video games as it stands. Because when he's talking about Flower, what does he say? Is the game scored? She doesn't say, do you win if you're the first to find a balance between the urban and the natural? Can you control the flower? So games, by his definition, are things that you can win. So he won't accept that Flower is a video game unless there's a scoring system or unless you can win it. So I think Ebert is really running with an inappropriate concept of what a video game is or can be. You're right that he does hit on that nice point about gameness, but I don't think he makes the most compelling case.
Yeah, and so it should be noted he's responding to Kelly Santiago. And I think they both make what's a common mistake and an easy one to make, one that I have made many times in the past, which is confusing aesthetics with art and if whether something's beautiful or not with whether it counts as art or not. And they both have moves in this debate between them where they're appealing to both video games that they think are beautiful or ugly and then artworks that they think are beautiful or ugly and leave it implicit that somehow that's supposed to settle this issue, where when things are beautiful in the way I think they should be, they are going to count as art, and when they're not, they don't. Though, of course, Ebert's move is a little more subtle than exactly as you presented it, Al. I think he's right in this notion of gamehood. I don't think he presents it correctly. I think there's a notion he's getting at. But, you know, you're both right in that he's confused on this issue of, like, whether a video game is a game, and he goes back and forth on it. But we got to be careful about whether he thinks video games have to have win conditions or whether games have to have win conditions. And so there's some room there where you might think that there are possible video games that just aren't games, and that's going to be okay. But if that's the case, this is going to be very problematic for Ebert's argument. Because once that gets established, he really only has a subset of video games to reject as art, and not all of them as a whole.
I'm confused, though, about why, if you're saying there's a... let's assume, perhaps I'm wrong, right? But let's assume Heavy Rain is a case of a video game that you don't win. I'm confused about why you would still call it... If you're saying some video games aren't games, why would you call them video games, right? Shouldn't they have a...
Yeah, this is the right question, right? So without getting too far afield into the philosophical wilderness, I think Kendall Walton has a really nice answer for this with his notion of categories of art. this was, what, 1973, I believe? I may be wrong about that. It's around then. And he's arguing that aesthetic properties, what makes something beautiful or exciting or elegant or garish, all depend on the idea that we categorize something properly. So when you look at a Frank Stella painting, it has all these structural, sculptural properties, but it's not that it's a very flat, dull sculpture. It's that it's a very dynamic, dimensional painting, and it matters that we categorize it correctly as painting. How do we know what something's categorized as? Well, we can't look just to its features. We have to look to something like the intentions of the artist, the creator. And so you might give an answer where something counting as a video game isn't going to depend solely on its, or even primarily on its formal features, but on whether the designer intends for it to be considered a video game. I think Proteus is a really nice example of this. Proteus is very minimal. It's a very minimal kind of 8-bit soundscape island that you wander around. Mm-hmm. And there, I mean, this issue of gamehood comes up. A lot of people are like, this just isn't a game, right? Yeah. And he's like, no, it is. I want you to think about it like a game. I want you to treat it like a game. People are like, well, there's hardly any rules. There's no score. There's no winning. There's no competition. There's no losing. How is this a game? And he goes, well, it is because I say it is. Now, I'm not sure that's exactly right, but this gets to something like this intuition where formal features alone are not going to answer this question.
By formal features, you mean just...
The quality, yeah, I mean the properties of the object. So, whether this thing has rules, how it looks, how it operates. It's more than just the object itself, but also how it's situated among other objects in the world. And this depends a lot on the creator, the designer, making it a certain way, presenting it a certain way, and presenting it among certain other things. Right. Mm-hmm. It matters that Proteus is distributed on Steam and not only displayed in an art gallery, for instance.
So if we assume, for the sake of argument, that in order to be more like an artwork, something has to be less like a game, I think there's something really interesting to be said for the historical continuity and the progression of video games as artworks and towards the less gamey style of game. There's an interesting comparison you can make there between the development of video games as an art form and the development of comics as an art form, because both have got this interesting feature of initially being... it's not so clear in the case of comics because of political cartoons and sketches and so on, but they both have this interesting history of being associated with children and of being trivial and playthings and that kind of stuff. And what you find in comics is that with publications like Mouse and Alan Moore's books in the 80s and Frank Miller's books in the 80s as well, you get them co-opting or acknowledging the fact that this medium has primarily been aimed at children and using that to add a kind of a creepy or sinister artistic quality to, or aesthetic quality, I suppose, to their more artful works in the medium. And I think it's interesting that just as comics haven't, or up until the 80s at least, couldn't quite escape their association with children, that video games too have found it difficult to shake off the kind of necessity for being just games. But where you find some quite interesting things is where game designers have, as you say, brought, taken the assumption that there do need to be gameplay elements, and use that to either make some point about games or do some kind of creepy childhood perversion thing. So I think there are interesting artistic opportunities that can arise from
hangovers. I think that's right. And so this requires a very subtle point where these games that are moving away from being purely or primarily or solely games are still, parasitic on what a game is, and that video games have traditionally been games in the past. So they're not jettisoning that, and they're not ignoring it. They're really kind of parasitic on that idea. It's fodder for the context of its creation. So Chris, I think you're right. I think I do find myself in agreement with Ebert, but in a strange way where I think he's only accidentally right about some of his argumentative moves. and but very wrong in his general claim that video games can never be art. Mm-hmm. Which is where I would say I think I feel the same way about Aaron Smuts's paper, Are Video Games Art, where he argues that by any definition of art, video games are going to count. I think he makes some good moves, but I think I can't agree. Where Ebert says video games can never be art, Aaron Smuts says video games will always be art. And I think they're too strong in both directions.
So I think there's something really important that we need to mention about Ebert. But this is my feeling. Maybe you guys didn't share it. It seems to me that Ebert is clearly making use of a very strongly evaluative conception of what it is for something to be art. Mm. So I've got this quote from his piece here where he says, "To my knowledge, no one in or out of the field has ever been able to cite a game worthy of comparison with a great dramatist, poets, filmmakers, novelists, and composers. That a game can aspire to artistic importance as a visual experience, I accept, but for most gamers, video games represent a loss of those precious hours we have available to make ourselves more cultured, civilized, and empathic." It seems that what he's appealing to there isn't anything really as fine-grained as the idea that there is something about gameplay which precludes the appreciation of something as an art form, but more that the kinds of experiences that video games can afford us just aren't deep enough.
Yeah, and this is the common mistake between arguing that something isn't art and arguing that it's bad art. And it seems like Ebert has a definition where anything that's going to count as art will necessarily be good art.
Right, which makes it quite a weird category, I think, but, you know, maybe that's... This is getting ahead of ourselves, incidentally, so not to dwell on the point, but it's funny that you mentioned that quote, Al, because I saw that earlier, and it was actually really similar to the Coleridge quote that Lopez has at the end of his chapter, right? Because
yes.
Coleridge yeah. says that novels are directly hostile to the cultivation, invigoration, and enlargement of the nobler faculties of the understanding. So, like, really, like, they're saying pretty much exactly the same thing there. Like, it's hilarious.
So, I think here is also a really good point to make one of the main distinctions that I think we have to make, which is the distinction between any one video game being an artwork and not being an artwork, and video games being an artistic medium, whatever we decide that means. And I think they're both really, really important questions, but I think that Aaron Smuts, when we come to talk about his paper, which I think we should do soon, Aaron Smuts is making a case that any video game can be art, but he doesn't say anything interesting, I don't think, about the video game medium and whether video games are an artistic medium, properly speaking.
Yeah, I found it quite unsatisfying. I was pleased, in fact, that Tavernor mentioned a couple of the issues with Smuts's article, because he says a lot of it is quite loose, right? So one of the things Tavernor complained about that I was glad he mentioned was that Smuts doesn't really distinguish between arguments for video games being art and arguments for aspects of video games having art status, you know, right? So he thinks that an argument that there's, like, visual art in a video game, for instance, is an argument for the game as a whole being an artwork. Which
yeah, this is what Smuts says.
Smuts' stuff about competition. So Smuts talks. He touches on this idea that gameness might be conflicting with artness, so to speak. One of his responses is that standard works of art often involve competition as subject matter, right? He uses the Karate Kid as an example, which is like using the term loosely, but you get what he's talking about, right? But even then, that's not really the same as actually being in a competition yourself.
No. Aaron Smuts in his paper, what's it called again? Are Video Games Art? What he basically says is, okay, so the way we can tell whether something's art or not is we figure out what our favourite theory of art is, and we figure out what the thing is that we're worried about, whether it's art or not, and we put them together and we see what solution we get. So once we decide what video games are, we can look at our art, our theories of art, and if a video game falls under these theories of art, then great, it's a work of art. And Smuts's paper is basically going through all the best theories of art and saying, look, these video games that I've picked kind of at semi-random, it's, what is it, Max Payne 3,
Halo,
yeah, and
Splinter Cell, I believe.
And Splinter Cell, yeah, great artworks of the medium. But and he says, look, these three count as art under all of these theories, so therefore they're works of art. But what's interesting is, as Chris said, is it he just like picks up on features of these games, like the fact that they've got music in them, or the fact that they have a plot, or the fact that they have some kind of aesthetic appeal, and says, look, this game has some kind of aesthetic appeal, therefore it's a work of art. But you just want to turn around and say to him, yeah, but movies have got soundtracks, but that's not what makes them works of art, you know.
Right, or and sunsets are beautiful, and it doesn't turn them into works of art.
Absolutely. What I think we need to be looking for is some artistically interesting features of video games as a medium. So what is it that video games can do that's artistically interesting, rather than saying, is this game or that game a work of art? Because I said in the introduction that any game can be a work of art, and I think that's right, but only in a really trivial sense, that any object can be a work of art if I put it in a gallery and stick an interesting block of text next to it explaining why it represents something about God knows what.
Yeah, that's very good. I think we're going to have our first serious disagreement here. Yeah, this is good. I actually agree. I think everything you said is right, that any object can be art. Any you know, material object can be art if an artist appropriates it in the right way and puts it in a gallery. I think where I have pause is the idea that any kind of intentional function can be art.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that.
Yeah, so what is that going to mean? So it's going to get a bit complicated, not too much. Objects are not always merely concrete. They're not just material things. They're not just stuff that you can, you know, touch and kick or whatever. You might argue that a hammer is not merely matter, you know, metal and rubber, wood, whatever, shaped in a hammer shape, but also made for the purpose of hammering things. That's not much of a complicating example, but games themselves might be. It might be that games are made with a certain kind of function, and they're meant to be interacted with in a certain way that precludes or is incompatible with also interacting with it or regarding it as art. Now, that, of course, would require a lot more sophisticated argumentation, which I think I could give. But in the interest of time, I won't. But I do think that this is the case where, this is where I get skeptical that there's going to be something particular about video games, some feature about video games that's going to bring in the whole party. And if, you know, we find what that feature is, all the video games are going to come in, but rather that we are going to have to look at it work by work, you know, video game by video game. But the point stands, and this is a very good point, that even if one were to find some individual video game that's going to count as art, unless it's merely in virtue, you know, ours, which I think you said really well, unless it's in virtue of some feature that all video games possess, that doesn't justify making all video games art. And I think that's the move that a lot of people aren't very careful with in this debate, where they go, well, I'm going to cherry pick my example, I'm going to show that this is going to count as artwork, and therefore all video games are. Or in the other direction, you know, here's some crappy video game that just no one in their right mind could think is art. It's a video game, therefore all video games are not art.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ebert even concedes this point, right? So that video games can be visually splendid. Say they can have lots of beautiful pictures on the screens. They can be made up of loads of wonderful 3D images. But if you say that, say Uncharted, which is, you know, they're really beautiful looking games. If you say that the Uncharted games are works of art by virtue of the fact that they have really beautiful 3D images in them, then what you're really saying is that they're works of graphic art of some description. So if we're talking about, I mean, bringing us back to the idea of categories of art, which brought up, it seems that if you're saying that this object, this video game, is a work of art by virtue of its the beauty of the digital models, you're saying that the appropriate category by which we ought to judge the artistic value of the game is actually the category of graphic art rather than the category of video games. We haven't yet identified what kinds of art-making features of video games make the category a useful one to criticise video games next to one another.
I think one of the things I liked in particular about Lopez's chapter is that he sort of takes the bull by the horns, right, of this question. So the question from Ebert was, is gameness incompatible with artness? And Lopez, sort of like what you were just talking about, Al, right, that Lopez talks about how we need to, if the question is can video games be art, we need to explain how their video gameness can make them art, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Instead of all these specific individual elements, right, that might lead to wrong categorization or whatever.
Let's talk a little bit more about what we might call disqualifying features. So features of video games like the gameplay, which are going to mean that they never can be. So I saw on this Wikipedia page there was two developers, which I hadn't heard of, but Michael Sammon and Aurea Garvey of Tale of Tales.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the studio?
No, I'm familiar with them, but only from reading about them, not from their games.
Yeah, I think this is interesting because they're game developers who say that video games can never be art. And again, they press this distinction between play and games and art. But they have a really funny reason for this, which I think we could probably knock over with a feather, but is worth...
is this where they say it takes away control from the creator of the piece, is it, or something like that?
No, but I think that's actually an interesting thing we could talk about. But what they say is that play satisfies the basic physiological human need.
Oh, that was terrible.
Yeah, I know. They say that since play is a basic biological need, that playing a game is satisfying this kind of animalistic urge. Whereas with art, you're after some higher understanding about things in general. I mean, the thing you say about that is that, like, the need to play isn't a physiological need, it's a psychological one.
Right.
So why not say that looking at art is also a psychological need? It certainly seems to be a artistic expression, certainly seems to be a psychological pressure that we have. So, I mean, that's just silly. But I think it's... Oh, okay, so I think... So maybe if I'm being a bit more charitable, I think...
Mm-hmm.
They're approaching the problem of gameness as opposed to artness in more of the way that I would approach it, which is that the experience of something as a game precludes the experience of it as an artwork, in that they require incompatible kinds of attention.
Yeah.
So it's not the mere fact that you're doing something with a goal. It's the fact that you're attending to features of the game that are about intricate attention and dexterity and these kinds of things, which just make it impossible to simultaneously pay the kind of attention that we might pay to a novel or a film or something, by virtue of their passivity, we can engage these kind of higher critical faculties.
Again, I'm going to mention Lopez here, right, because I think he talks about something relevant to this. You know, when he's talking about The Sims, right, he says how you're reflecting on ideas about the relationship between happiness and how you design your house, right? That people playing the game are thinking about that stuff and thinking about it through playing the game, right? So it's...
And more so that, you know, this idea of absorption need not be incompatible with treating something like an artwork. If you really have to think about something, you have to think about an object in a certain way for it to be legitimately art, but you get so wrapped up in it when you're experiencing it, that doesn't have to be problematic, because you can get lost in a novel, and Lopez's point is, it's only later when you go reflect on it that you really then appreciate its, you know, historical context of creation and all of this, and its relation to other works, and it's then that you're appreciating its artness, though you're getting lost in the experience of it during your engagement with it.
Also, I'm not thinking about absorption per se. I don't think that's the same thing. I think it's rather that the kind of attention that you have to give a game in order to be good at it,
mm-hmm.
it's just a barrier of entry, right? So it just in order to access the content of the game, you have to give it this particular kind of very technical attention, which is analogous to the so if you're reading a novel in a foreign language, say, you're going to find it more difficult. You're going to have a lot of effort to access the content, and that, I think, is analogous to the kind of attention. So it's just the attention you have to get to access whatever the artistic content is.
Okay, so here's this idea that the attention that we have to pay to games conflicts with the attention we pay to art. The way this tends to be cashed out is in a way that I think applies more to sort of action games, right? So one of the characteristic things about interactive video games is that they present you with practical demands, right? You have to react to what's happening, so you're in a sort of practical mode that people might think isn't the same as, like, you know, the aesthetic attitude, ha ha ha. But that even then, that's not going to be true of all video games, right? So I'm a massive nerdy fan of adventure games, for instance. And one of the things I really like about adventure games, as Tim Schafer says, you play them at your own pace, right? So you there aren't really practical demands in an adventure game, because typically you're not operating against a time constraint. No one's coming after you most of the time. You actually just sit there and think, and you can. All it is pointing and clicking, right? So that's not. I think that's, in fact, it invites a contemplative form of attention, right? Which I think isn't that different from, has to be that different from art attention.
Sure. Well, actually, on the point of adventure games, I might even press the point further and saying, look, the thing that makes adventure games games is the puzzle and the kind of minimal interactivity that you have to do. And you could still press the point that when you're solving these puzzles, there's no room for artistic engagement there either, because you're full of thinking about, you know, realistically, you're clicking every conceivable object on the screen to see if anything happens. But
I think a lot of the time, from experience in adventure games, there'll be puzzles where you get stuck and you end up just sort of wandering around aimlessly for a while, and you're working on the puzzle, but I think sort of subconsciously, right? But in a way that I don't think we could, you know, if we think that's necessarily problematic, then I'm not sure we could ever have art appreciation, insofar as we might have, like, subconscious practical concerns going on that we're just not aware of. So, a lot of the time when you're in the thick of it, but that doesn't happen so much, right? I don't know.
Okay, think about this is a little bit of a sidebar, but I think an interesting point. So if you think about the emotional experience of playing games, and they seem to operate on two very distinct spectrums. So you've got the one spectrum which operates, I think, at the level of immediate engagement, which is characterized by feelings of frustration or of accomplishment, that kind of thing. And then there's the other level which operates, at the level of narrative representation, where you're responding to the actual fictional event in the game. So that's going to be characterized by, you know, joy, sorrow, all the kind of the regular emotional responses that we expect from artworks. It seems like we've got two very, very different streams of responses to video games. And it seems like we can, if you grant me that there is a challenge, maybe there isn't a challenge, but if there is a challenge, it seems like we can meet it in one of two ways. We can either say, okay, so in order to make video games that are artworks, we need to minimize the gameplay element as much as possible, or we can say, actually, it's not a problem because there are artistic qualities and there's matter for artistic expression in the gameplay itself.
Yeah. So I don't know. Where we go with that? I mean, again, that's sort of, well, that's a little bit like what Lopez was saying with The Sims, right? That the gameplay itself can.
Can we just footnote this with Lopez is right about everything.
Oh, heavens, no.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah, Brock was saying. Can we have like a 2-minute break so I can make some tea, though? Is that okay?
Okay, so I guess so. Maybe we can talk a bit more about that when you go and make your tea.
That's my guys. Back in a second.
See you in a sec.
I'm back.
You're back.
All right, great. We're gonna kick this up a notch. We've been so polite.
Do you want to start, Brock, by weighing in on the discussion we just had, and then you can move on to a brief synopsis?
Yeah, I'm gonna throw it under the bus a little bit, but that's okay. So to recap, the question is attending to something are the emotions that we experience when we play a video game somehow incompatible with the kind of emotions that we have when we're having an appropriate art regarding scenario?
Well, it was more like, do these two varieties of emotions indicate that we have two varieties of attention, and the fact that they don't co-occur indicates that the two varieties of attention don't co-occur?
Yeah, so I'm going to be pretty neutral on this. I think that might be right. I think even if we grant that point, let's say that they don't co-occur. Is that clear that things aren't going to be able to count as artworks or not? It's a difficult question.
It's going to limit the choices we have in how to approach an answer to the question.
I think that's right. And so we should say something about what it is exactly that we're doing, right? So we've tried to give an analysis of, well, first we just try to answer this question, are video games art, right? The question's interesting, and which way it comes out is interesting. But straight away, when you try to answer it, you've got to figure out, well, what is it even that you're asking, right? And one thing that we haven't talked directly about is one of the elements, what is art? It's a vexed question. But it turns out that this question about whether video games are art or not ends up being complicated in a very, very interesting way, right? We have to say, first, what art is. Well, maybe not first, but one of the things we have to say is what art is. That's a difficult question. We have to say what video games are, because we've got to figure out if they're going to count as having the kinds of features that are then going to count as art. But to say what a video game is really tough. People aren't very clear about whether video games are games or if video games have just historically been games and are now able to be also not games. And you've got to say something also about playing and whether playing is a kind of thing you do with an object like a game or a video game that just is not going to be compatible with also, you know, Chris, you mentioned this sort of pejoratively, but, you know, whatever this aesthetic attitude is, if we take that really broadly and charitably to just be the right kind of attention that we give an artwork, maybe those things match up, maybe they don't. So we've got a lot of questions on the table that have to be answered, really difficult, really big questions that have to be answered before we can give an answer to the question, are video games art?
Cool, that's a really good summary. So with that under our hats, I think we should move on to some of the answers. So we've talked a little bit about Aaron Smuts, so maybe we should revisit him as the first guy to really offer a philosophical answer to the question of whether video games are art, and just briefly maybe recap the way he does it and why that doesn't answer any of the interesting questions that Brock just laid out for us. So the way Smuts goes about it, as we said, is he lists the kind of good theories of art, which are what are some theories of art, right? So the problem of what art is goes back to, I don't know if the problem of what art is goes back to Plato or if Plato just assumes that art is this thing. Mm-hmm. But Plato's account of art is, I think, the oldest one that we know of, and he says that the point of art is to imitate nature. So anything that imitates nature is art. I don't know if that's a fair gloss on Plato, but that's what I don't know enough about Plato to say that, but that's more or less what it is. But this is why he thinks it's a bad thing, right? Because he thinks that an imitation of nature is never going to be as good as the real nature, so...
Which is itself rubbish anyway.
Rubbish anyway.
Because we're all in the cave.
So Plato thinks the world... So really, this is really, really a really bad gloss on Plato. Plato thinks that the world is an illusion, so he thinks that representations of the world are illusions about illusions. So you're one step even
doubly
further
bad.
Away from the truth.
Yeah. Is that called transpositional loss or something? Like every time you make a copy of something, the quality degrades, you know?
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds
right. I feel like that's an apt metaphor, but never mind.
Does he think... Interesting. I don't know why either of you guys would know this. Does he think... Because he has a particular beef with music. Because he thinks it stirs unhealthy appetites. Especially the flute, apparently. He's got a big problem with the flute. He thinks it's a very lascivious instrument.
Oh, man, I'd love to hear what he thinks about rock and jazz.
Yeah. But does he think that... So presumably he doesn't think that for the same reason. He doesn't think that music's representational. Doesn't think music's mimetic. It doesn't try and represent the world. I don't know. Maybe that's completely
think
irrelevant.
Would make it better, though. I wish I knew more about Plato. Plato's endlessly interesting. Well,
yeah.
Maybe that shows my inexperience as much as anything else.
So we have that theory of art, the mimetic theory of art, which no one really, apart from Roger Ebert, who seems to back Plato on what art is. So no one apart from Roger Ebert thinks.
But of course, Ebert comes off less as theoretically interested in Plato and more just wanting a big name on his side.
But he does say that, like, for him, art is about representing nature, but through the prism of the soul of the artist, mm-hmm. which is very mimetic. But
I guess that we don't really have, unsurprisingly, insofar as Plato was down on the arts, we don't have many aesthetic theories that inherit things from him specifically, but I would say that cognitivism, so the idea that art's primary source of value is its capacity to like enlighten us or teach us or something, is loosely inspired by Aristotle, right, who also had a mimetic theory of the arts or what have you.
So what are some of the other theories of art that Smuts talks about? We've got the intentional theory of art, which
yes.
is...
Which oh, no. is, let's go into that. Yeah, okay, sorry.
So the intentional theory... So some of these have quite glaring holes in them. So there's the intentional theory of art, which says that something is art if the artist intends it to be art, mm-hmm. which I've always thought was a funny view because it still doesn't tell you anything about what it is for something to be art. It just gives you the success conditions for something being art, but it doesn't thereby tell you anything about
yeah, any though interestingly, the nice move there is that it does separate this question of what is art into two. Like, when is yeah. something art versus what does it mean for it to be art?
Yeah, or what are some of the features of art that make them a unified kind? There's also the cluster theory of art, which Smuts talks about and the other guys talk about as well.
And yeah, and that one, importantly, is not a definition, but merely a theory. I guess, as it's presented.
Sorry, I feel like this is being way too that would be way too loose and fluffy. So
perhaps.
So we have the mimetic theory of art, which is that art is something that tries to represent nature. The intentional theory of art, which is that something is a work of art if the artist intends it to be a work of art. There's the institutional theory of art, which is roughly that something is an artwork if someone in the art world says it's an artwork. We have the cluster theory of art. Maybe Chris, because your supervisor was the guy who pushed this theory. What's the cluster theory of art?
So it's basically a sort of a disjunctive definition where that...
Whoa
that
there, means... technical speaky guy.
Sorry. Well,
what's
no,
a disjunctive definition?
You know, so a definition gives you the specific conditions under which something counts as something, right? And a disjunctive definition gives you a bunch of characteristics, some mixture of which can make something the thing that it's a theory of, right? So the cluster theory of art gives you, lists various characteristics that seem present and significant in a wide range of things that we consider artworks. The idea basically, you know, harking back a little bit to Wittgenstein using the concept of game as something that doesn't admit of a specific definition, but rather a sort of loose family resemblance where there's a bunch of things that are like each other, but some things, like if there's three games, A, B, and C, A might be very much like B and B be like C, but A not be like C, right? So there's a wide set of criteria, not all of which are had by every object falling under the definition, but which some mixture of which are common to all of them, right?
That's a good gloss on that, I think.
So the dissatisfying thing about it, I guess, right, is that it leaves it somewhat unclear, particularly with sort of new artworks, right? That might be very different. That's something that happens. It's hard to adjust to stuff like that or to justify really why some, because some objects will have a lot of the important criteria but not seem like they're art, and then it doesn't look like there's a very specific explanation the cluster account can give for why that thing doesn't count as art status, right? Why aren't these characteristics doing their job this time or whatever?
So have we left any...
Well, let's see. He actually gives... Smuts gives us a nice list.
Yeah.
He said his historical theories, aesthetic theories, institutional... Well, it's a mix. But let's run through this list really quick. So he says that I offer reasons for thinking that video games can be art according to historical, aesthetic, institutional, representational, and expressive theories of art. So, yes, historical is Levinson, my advisor's pet theory. So we're all going to have a horse in this race.
my advisor's never given a theory of art.
He
floats above that kind of
how bourgeois, yes. yeah, and so what Smuts does is he just goes through and he gives... I think this is like the right first move, right? Say, look, we've got different theories. You don't have to agree with any one of them or some particular combination of them, but just somewhere in that mix, whatever your intuitions about what art is going to be covered. Now, if that's the case, I'm going to go through and show you that, you know, he gives us five theories of art. I'm going to show you that by each of those five, video games are going to count as art. And he goes through and he gives his arguments and then ta-da at the end. Look, each of these say that video games is art. You probably think that art is going to be covered by one or more of these theories. Therefore, my job is done. Video games are art.
But again, so we're talking about Smuts, right? So one of the places where it goes wrong is by explaining how certain aspects of games qualify as art according
to this. That's right. So I think he makes that mistake that Lopez doesn't make, that Lopez does a really good job about, is saying there's got to be something particular about them being video games, you know, evaluating video games as a video game that makes it art, instead of it being just something, in this case video games, that have art-like qualities about them. I think Aaron Smuts has the right methodology or the right approach in that we want to get an independently motivated definition of art. We don't want to just cherry pick, as we've seen people cherry pick examples of video games to make their case either for or against video games being art. We have to look at all video games. And furthermore, with our art theory or our art definition, it needs to be one that's independently motivated. And it has to be, we can't just pick the one that if we want to exclude video games from being art that does that, or if we want to include them that does that, but find the thing that stands up the best on its own. And this is the mistake that I think Lopez and Tavernor both make, is that they pick the cluster theory of art, but seemingly just because it gives them an answer that they want about video games.
Well, they do. So Tavernor, I think Lopez does as well. They both give good reasons for supposing that something like the cluster theory of art is going to turn out to be the right one. But you're right that for present purposes it is a good idea for Smuts to like go through every theory of art and show that, you know, it's not just limited to your favourite theory, it's also going to stand up under any plausible theory. Mm-hmm. But as we've already said, this doesn't maybe answer the most interesting or pressing questions about the relationship between video games and art, or what makes video games works of art, because of the way he goes about matching these particular video games to the various categories. So as he says that, oh, such and such a video game has a soundtrack, therefore it's a work of art, and what are some of the other things? Oh, the institutional one is a popular one. So lots of people say, well, the institutional theory of art, there's something right about that, and there is clearly interest in video games from the art world or from various art institutions, therefore video games can count as art. But what's interesting is it's not clear from any of the particular, particularly when they talk about exhibitions, it's not clear that these exhibitions like the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, he talks about, they had a symposium entitled Artcade, Exploring the Relationship Between Video Games and Art. And it's not clear that the institutions there are picking up on any of the artistically interesting features of video games as a medium that we pointed to earlier, rather that they're just taking an artistic interest in the video games as cultural objects.
Yeah. Yeah. And one might worry that really this is the move that Grant Tavernor is making as well, just in a more sophisticated way by appealing to the cluster theory. He's never committed, he never has to be committed to any particular set of criteria that makes something art, as Chris explained. It's just going to be this collection of things that generally count in favor of something being an artwork. And then he goes, and look, a lot of video games have a lot of these features. And it's telling, as much as I like Tavernor's book, it's telling that as his chapter on video games as art progresses, the claims get weaker and weaker. And it goes from saying video games are art and they're art for these reasons to here are reasons why you might think that video games are art to, at the end, kind of a, well, perhaps we could understand video games as art and it's instructive to view them in that way. And I think Lopez has a similar kind of decreasing strength of claim as he goes further through the examination.
So, I mean, have we covered Smuts now? I think we basically said what?
Yeah.
Everything that he said. So should we move on to what do you want to do?
I mean, I liked. I don't have anything to say, but I liked when Smuts was quoting that. Was it David Best on the philosophy of sport, right?
And yeah, I think that's right.
So his ending point that obviously it's not of particular interest if you don't find it at all persuasive to suggest that sport can count as art, but his ending point that sports fail to meet a sort of representational condition where, you know, a sport cannot be about something else in the way that an art piece can, whereas it looks like games can. So there's a respect in which they're better positioned than sport to count as art, but like I say, maybe just no one would find that persuasive if they don't
Yeah, I've never really been persuaded of the, so it's usually chess. So people always bring up chess and say, "Oh, chess is the art candidate of the sports or games world." And I've never been persuaded.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because I think it seems there's a lot of people that reject it as both art and a sport.
Yeah.
Poor old chess. I don't know. I think I wouldn't mind calling chess an art, potentially. I mean, I found that stuff interesting where he's talking about how there's an award for best game, right?
Mm.
And that made me think, you know, the question there is really, okay, so if if the aesthetics of your strategy form a large part in your decision mechanism when you're playing a game of chess, that's all well and good, but if you want to use that to try and qualify it as art, I wonder, you know, it's just not clear to me, not knowing enough about chess or the playing of chess, it's not clear to me how much or how often the aesthetic aspect of your strategy would have the power to actually outweigh and override your desire to win the game, right?
Yeah, you might worry if you're trying to play the most aesthetically interesting game of chess and trying to win that award, you might not even really be playing chess anymore.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right, yeah, yeah.
There's loads of really interesting stuff we can say about the the role of players and like the aesthetic quality of playing games of various sorts, including video games. So I think that's definitely something we should return to.
Yes.
On a final smuts note, made me think about slightly about ontology possibly, which is unusual for me, but in one of Smuts's footnotes he makes quite a implausible seeming claim where he says that maybe we should think of video games as not having rules at all, because rules are made to be broken, right? In a sport, you can break the rules, but you can't break the rules in a video game. But obviously, you can cheat, but I suppose cheats are like programmer-authorized ways of changing the game, so maybe you can just hack them, right? But yeah. But then that's the ontology question, right? Are you still playing the same game once you've hacked it?
And Bernard Suits says unequivocally no. Mm. One is not when one does that. But I do love that footnote from Aaron Smuts because it sounds so much like something Patrick Swayze would say in a movie.
I think there's an even more interesting question following on from that, which is that when you have a broken game or you have a glitch in the game which permits you to do something which is still obviously against the spirit of the game.
Yeah.
If taking advantage of that glitch, even though it's programmed in the final product of the game, whether that counts as still playing the game.
These are all really interesting questions that we should totally
talk
about
on a different topic
when we do our episode on games and playing games.
Yeah.
Which is going to be coming soon and awesome.
So, shall we go on to... That's so Smuts.
We've talked about Tavernor a bit, but he makes very interesting things, but, you know, I think I've said my piece. I mentioned this to Chris earlier. You know, I think Lopez and Tavernor's arguments are both in favor of video games counting as art are both weakened severely by them leaning on the cluster theory, given that, for the very reasons that Chris noted, right, where the cluster theory is its weakest is that it just can't be decisive on whether something counts as art or not, because it's meant to not be. And here we've got this new thing, video games, as a candidate for art status, and... Sure, maybe it's going to share some characteristics, but the question then becomes, do those characteristics, are those sufficient to push it into the category of art or not? Cluster theory does not give us the answers.
I suppose maybe part of the assumption, if you're a cluster theorist, is that that's just the nature of the category art, right? That it is the kind of thing you can't be sure about, that something qualifies for it or not.
I think that's right.
Sure, I'm not sure I'm too uncomfortable with that sort of idea. I don't know. Well, I need to think about that more, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Though, given that people are so vexed, right, and also so concerned, you might think that there's something to recommend a stronger claim being possible, where we really can, if we think about this well
just
enough...
Just because people want it doesn't mean it has to be there, right?
It's true. I want my bank account to be full of billions, and it just no amount of wishing is going to do it. But people do seem very certain about other kinds of things counting as artworks or not, and that could potentially admit under scrutiny or reflection some more definite conditions than cluster theory can give us.
I'm not going to dismiss the possibility out of hand, but I remain to be convinced that anything else does a less problematic job.
Well, it's so it's more that the theory is just incomplete, right? So we've got
again.
I think that's right. I don't think anyone can ever say that,
guys. Yeah. Sorry.
No, but I think maybe something. So Brock brought up an interesting point earlier about the fact that the question of whether something's art is really two different questions. And we can talk about at what point an object becomes a work of art, and there's a whole different kind of question, which isn't the kind of thing that the cluster theory is trying to get at. The cluster theory is a more descriptive thing, of like the kinds of qualities that something can have which will count towards it being an artwork once it's been created. But theories like the intentional theory and the institutional theory are more concerned with at what point an object becomes an artwork. And it seems to me that in the end, the right answer is going to be some combination of the cluster theory and something like the intentional theory or the institutional theory. So while you have got... So as I think it was you, Chris, who said, yes, there's a problem with the cluster theory in that there's going to be... Or maybe this was Brock. There's a problem with the cluster theory in that lots of things which are obviously not artworks are going to come out as having a lot of these properties in the art cluster, but we're still not going to want to call them artworks. The thing that might, in the end, decide whether they're artworks or not is going to be something like the institutional theory. So is a Maserati a work of art? Well, maybe it is if it crops up in a museum somewhere, but until then, even though it has these various properties identified by the cluster theory.
Yeah, interestingly, I've nicknamed my garage Museum, so that settles the question on Maseratis.
Nice. How many Maseratis have you got?
Too many, really.
I think they pay grad students too much in America.
Well, it's just the conversion to Italian that makes it possible.
nice, yeah.
I think that's actually an excellent point. And
oh, thank you.
And the move that I would make is saying, look, I mean, there's really little to disagree with about cluster theory as some kind of descriptive claim about features that artworks have. The interesting thing comes about when you've got these conditions of arthood that aren't descriptive, but merely conditions that have to be satisfied for something to count as an artwork. And if we get convinced of one of those being right, and then video games either meet or fail to meet those, or what I think will happen is that some will meet it and some won't, then it becomes very interesting. Then you're getting an answer. You're getting an interesting answer with good reason behind it, but not giving us the wholesale inclusion or exclusion that we might have suspected initially.
Right, and I don't feel like we have found a characteristic that definitely artworks have to have that definitely video games don't. I guess the sense I'm getting is from you two guys is that maybe you're on roughly a similar page where you think that there's something about paying attention to art that conflicts with something about playing games. But what then, I suppose, do you say to like cases like Lopez's example of The Sims and stuff like that, where it looks like the gameness is actually a way of expressing something that might be artistically significant.
So I think that's a really good way of meeting the challenge, and in fact I think that's the best way of meeting the challenge, that we have to find something about this apparently disqualifying feature which actually promotes artistic engagement with the work. I'm not particularly convinced by the example of The Sims. I think that's going to be a case of taking an artifact, or you're taking The Sims and you're kind of critically analysing it in the kind of way that critical theorists will critically analyse anything and try and get some kind of meaning out of it. I think it's stretching the intended function of The Sims a little bit too far to say that it operates as a prop for reflecting on the nature of happiness.
We don't need to. I mean, we don't need to like 100% buy that specific example, but I think it represents a plausible counterfactual case where something like The Sims, or you know, I think it seems quite plausible that you can imagine a game that uses.
Yeah, but I think there the devil's going to be in the details, where go along the lines that Al is describing. You know, this intentional function. You know, what the creator meant for it to be. When we start fiddling around with these things to get our example to work, I think it changes the supposed video game in the case to a very different kind of creature. A very different kind of thing than we normally see in the market. And I mean, we have to say in the market. I mean, not that something being a commercial product excludes it from being artwork, far from it, but that it
not
video games. Video games are very complicated artifacts. They're very complicated things with a lot of intentions and a lot of audience kind of interactions in place and a lot of market forces. And it's easy to say, well, we can just tweak this or tweak that to get it to fit our theory just right. But when we do that, we have to take seriously those tweakings, and as we must take seriously all tweakings, and see that they really can make strange chimeras of the supposed artifacts.
So shall we begin to wrap up by, I think maybe an interesting question to come to at this point is if maybe we can give examples with reasons of any video games that we think are artworks.
Yes, let's do that, with the caveat that it may still be early days, so as artworks go, they may seem relatively simplistic, but nonetheless something.
Yeah, yeah. But I like this project. This is challenging.
So I think there's a really interesting historical point, which is kind of a callback to something that we said a long time earlier, which is that video games are still very much in their infancy. And if you think about the length of time that it took for film to get any kind of artistic interest, as opposed to just being a curiosity and sideshow somewhere, that was from, what, the 1890s up until maybe the 1910s or so. So in terms of timeline, we're operating roughly on the same kind of spectrum as film was. So we can expect, if progress, I mean, there's an additional difficulty here in that the market forces driving game production are headed in completely the opposite direction. So the market pressure is for games to be toys as opposed to artworks, whereas that never really existed with films. But
I think that's decreasingly the case these days, right, with the indie scene and everything, right? I think Kickstarter as well, crowdfunding and the rest of it. I mean, it's largely true, sure, but I don't think it's necessarily all that bad.
Yeah, sure, I'm just trying to give an excuse for why for why so many mainstream games are still so bad.
Yeah, well, I think this is the point to make, right? It is about mainstream games, and as mainstream games have consolidated their budgets, you know, EA's putting out, I think, 11 games this year instead of the 42 that it put out a couple years ago. This actually has created a lot of space at the bottom for indie developers to come in and say, well, no one's even making this type of game anymore, I want to do it. But this is not particularly new. I think it's just gaining steam. Like, Newgrounds has been, you know, that's a website that's been making indie games for well over a decade now. It's just not always in the forefront. These aren't commercial products.
Yeah.
But okay. But this is the right point. I mean, things even if we have some candidates here that are interesting, they may be nascent in their in their quality.
Cool. So, who wants to go first?
Oh, well, there's so many games to mention, you know. The more I think about, the more I think about the word art, the more insecure I get. How normative is the idea, right? I assume we're not talking about high art in the more sort of Ebertian sense, right? But generally speaking, I think it's something that shows promise, something that's on the way to games developing into art, you know. A lot of, again, the more sort of indie games, I guess, so obvious things like Flower, I think Journey as well, Limbo, I really like Limbo's very aesthetically pleasing, okay, but that doesn't make the game itself the artwork, but I think there's elements of the gameplay that feed into that. Oh, in fact, one very good example of an artwork, well, this is, yeah, so I'm not sure. I recently played this. I may have bored you with this before, I don't know, but I recently played the indie game Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Yeah.
I don't want to give any spoilers, right, so I can't be too specific, but there's something about how there's a moment in that game at the end where they use the standard sort of control system you've been using all the way through the game. You do it in a way that's new and different and says something about the story and what's happening, and you kind of express it. It's just a very impressive example of how something's gameness can make some sort of artistic move, let's say. So I'm gonna have to throw that one in there. What about you guys?
I am gonna. So there's lots of different examples I can give, but I think the best one is probably going to be one of the most boring, which is BioShock. Because I think, so there's lots of stuff that's really, really artistically satisfying about that game, and my favourite thing about it is that most of the stuff that's really artistically satisfying is either a product of the gameplay, like the big twist. I mean, it's been how many years, so I don't care.
Is that a product of the gameplay, though? I was just worrying that.
Yeah, no, it is. So the fact that... So the big twist is only impactful because... So I know that this is a twist that was the same on System Shock 2, or was the same kind of thing as happened on System Shock 2, except more so. So the twist in Bioshock is a product of the gameplay because it's only impactful because... you've been playing the game in the way you have
up until that point, right?
It's only significant because of the fact that it's a game. If it wasn't a game, it wouldn't be significant.
I mean, it's not fair to say it wouldn't be significant without being a game, but I think it definitely highlights it, and it's part of how the specific way it's...
It would be a really trite plot device if it wasn't if it wasn't in a game.
It's almost like some people already think it's a really trite...
In fact, that's a problem now. If it wasn't in a game, it would be really plot device. Doesn't that seem to suggest that the state of game writing is actually like quite poor?
Well, no, I really don't think so. Because what's going to count as good script writing for a movie isn't the same as what's going to count as good writing for a novel. There's no reason to. So I think Bioshock counts as a really good instance of script writing for a video game. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that what would be a really trite plot device in a film is actually a really good plot device in a really good... I don't even want to call it a plot device because it's a kind of core thematic development in Bioshock. And I think that's just... I think that has to do, again, with the fact that the different categories that the works are operating in is going to make certain features of them good, bad, trite, or what have you.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to interject, it's Brockster to speak, I'm sorry, but we should also mention the Stanley Parable. I think that's probably a good example of game art, probably. I don't know what you
think
about that.
I like the Stanley Parable a lot. So, I'll say one theoretical point and then give my choice. It's interesting that you guys were both talking about gameplay, but I think you're talking about different things. The kind of gameplay that Chris is describing is a way of interacting. It's actually the method of controlling the game that matters and that is the focus and that is like representational or conveying some content. Whereas the kind of gameplay that Al's talking about seems more like just a result of the decisions you make. It doesn't matter whether you have to click your mouse or move it a certain way or push a button on the keyboard or a controller or whatever. It's just that it's the result of decisions. And I think those both could be perspicuously included as gameplay. It just is helpful to recognize that they're very different kinds of gameplay. So my choice for a video game is one that I think is not... Well, I'll say what it is. I think it's Amnesia, Dark Descent. Okay. Not because it's particularly artful. I'm not really sure what artful means. But what I like about it is how straightforward it is about the way you're supposed to interact with it. There's actually a disclaimer at the beginning that says, like, do not play this to win. It says what you should do is just immerse yourself in the environment and experience it like that. And when you do that, it's very aware. The designers are very self-aware that what they're trying to get you to experience, which is only possible because it's interactive, is a kind of experience that is disconnected from a desire or a drive to meet certain goals or to win. Or to do anything like that, but rather it's just to inhabit this world, this fictional representation, and let it impact you in a certain way. And I really like that the designers are so aware and careful about that presentation.
Yeah,
we've actually got a really interesting selection here, because if you remember a while ago I said, well, in order to meet this challenge, or what we decided was, I guess, the most, what we collectively seem to agree was the most pressing challenge in the distinction between games and art, is that we've got, in the case of Amnesia, someone's taken the one path and said, okay, we're going to make this as little like a game as possible, and we're going to start right at the beginning by disabusing you of any notions that this is a game in any real sense. Whereas in the case of Bioshock and much more so in Brothers, it's the gameness itself which seems to have been harnessed or attempted to be harnessed for artistic ends.
I wonder, the Stanley Parable I feel like is a good contender for art status maybe, but then I can easily see how you would describe the Stanley Parable as not a game. I want to ask Brock again and like sort of press you on this again. So
good.
You want to say that games can't be art, but not all video games are games. So I want to say, why do you call them games then? And your answer seems to be adverting to some sort of mixture of intentions and institutional stuff. But what? I mean, okay, maybe I should take that. I don't know. I still feel dissatisfied somehow. I suddenly feel struggling.
Do you mean why do I call games games, or why do I call video games games?
Video games games, right?
Yeah, I call video games games just because it's a colloquial shortening. I mean, we just talk about video games as games. We call them games. Video game player, yeah. You know, people who engage in video games as players. But but one need not be doing the activity of playing a game when one is engaging with a video game.
So this is where we're getting to the really tricky notion of having to try and define game, which, as you've already mentioned, is famously difficult to do.
That's right.
If you think of the category of games as including things like games of make-believe that children play in the playground.
Right.
Playing a game can just consist in coming up with an imaginary world and mucking around in it. Then there's no reason that we can't say that something like Amnesia is a game, even though it doesn't have any win conditions or...
Right.
Well, it does have win. Well, I don't know. It has getting to the end conditions, but
that's right. Right.
Yeah. So I guess in a way, it's two against one here, right? Because I totally still feel like gameness can make for an artwork.
No, I think so. I think it can too. But I think that's what the tricky question is, and I think that that's actually the way that the industry broadly conceived. Is handling this problem. They're trying, it seems like more and more they're trying to find distinctive things about video games that they can harness for artistic expression, rather than just piggybacking on other art forms and trying to find artistic expression like in a similar way to, like, cutscenes, thank God, are now fantastically unfashionable.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to the same thing. So video games have got to the point now where they're saying, okay, let's stop trying to be films, or let's stop trying to be choose-your-own-adventure books or really sophisticated tabletop role-playing games, and see if there's something about video games as a medium that we can use for sophisticated artistic ends.
Yeah, so I'll say two things about, in defense of my totally correct position. I'll say three things. We should be careful between talking about the interactive elements of a game as what makes it good. And calling that just the game features of the game, because those might be separate. Two, I've referenced Bernard Suits already, I think. If I haven't, let me do it now. He's great, and he gives a very nice discussion of games, offering a definition, and makes this distinction between closed games and open games. And closed games are going to be this more rigorous notion of win conditions and competition and things like that that might be thought to be exclusive of art status. Open games are going to be more like, you know, games of children's make-believe, maybe. Games of children's make-believe and more exploratory world type game, open world type games, certain video games. But what's great about Suits is that he takes Wittgenstein at his word. Wittgenstein doesn't say games can't be defined. He says, if you want to do it, you have to go look and see. And Suits says, great, I'm going to go look and see. And he does it, and I think he gets a nice definition. What's great about that is that if he's right, if he's able to do that, then this actually is a big strike against Barrett Scott's cluster theory, given that he bases that also on Wittgenstein's anti-essentialism, or supposed anti-essentialism about art. But this is all going to be, there's all going to be plenty of room to talk about this in future episodes.
Okay. Incidentally, random note, I was thinking about Lopez there. I quite enjoyed his chapter. The only thing I wondered about, this is an incredibly trivial point that's not really worth mentioning, but when he defines interactive games as games where the player can influence the display,
yeah.
He says that all games have a display, and I wondered about like something like role-playing, right, where there isn't... People are all imagining everything. They're just sitting in a room, right? And they're supposed to... They're playing characters who might be very different, so it's not like their bodies are props for their characters.
Right? I think that's right. A lot of the stuff Lopez says I'm all about. I think Lopez is doing really good work and doing a lot of good distinction-making, but some of the examples need to be thought out a bit more.
and he says Dota instead of World of Warcraft at one stage. Or he describes World of Warcraft as a strategy game.
Yeah, like, he describes it as a strategy game, which is probably telling about his habits or lack of habits.
He played WoW. I actually spoke to him at dinner, and he said that he played WoW for playing this game. He's got a kid who plays WoW, but I don't know. I actually thought it was pretty cool. You know, he mentioned some...
I think this is one of the nice things. I think Tavenor and Lopez both succeed in not cherry picking in a biased way the video games that they're wanting or willing to consider.
So that, I mean, I guess that's about as far as we're going to get. If you've been hoping for a conclusive resolution, then I guess
welcome to philosophy.
Yeah, let's talk about
questions better, I guess, is one way of looking at it. So
we've done some really good discussion here. We've managed to bring out some of the really important problems in even posing the question of whether video games are art. The most important of which, I guess, is that there's very little hope of coming up with a conclusive answer that's going to apply to all video games. So just as Roger Ebert's saying that all video games can never be art is deeply implausible, so is Aaron Smuts's claim that any video game probably can be art because it's going to match up with some of these theories. So it seems like what we're going to have to do is look a bit more carefully at what video games are and what the artistic, what the possible artistic uses of them are, which is definitely something that we're going to be investigating in future episodes.
Yeah, and furthermore, you know, our interest in games and video games is not limited to merely whether they're art or not. In fact, there's a whole line of criticism about video games, whether they're good or not, as video games, that just need not concern itself with this question. And we're certainly going to be examining that as well going forward.
So I guess that wraps it up for the first episode. We really hope that you've enjoyed it. I'll put up somewhere some way of you getting back to us and letting us know if you've enjoyed it, or if not, why not?
Yeah, send us your questions. We'd be happy to talk about whatever.
We hope you join us again for any future episodes. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Al Baker in Sheffield.
I'm Brock Rao, coming in from Maryland.
And goodbye from Chris Berner in Glasgow.